Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Standing Post. This is your host, Cody Starkin, and in this month's episode, we bring you a retired special agent from the Dignitary Protection Division who is in charge of the security planning for the 2020 Democratic National Convention in the city of Milwaukee. Along with federal, state, and local partners, he and his team worked for more than a year to ensure the safety and security for all those who attended the event, even while under COVID-19 restrictions. Now, please welcome retired Assistant Special Agent in Charge, Robert Pacey. ASAC Robert Pacey, thank you for coming on the show today. I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with me and talk to the listeners about convention planning. But do you mind introducing yourself to the listeners?
Not at all. Cody, thank you again for having me. My name is Robert Pacey, and I'm an assistant special agent in charge with the United States Secret Service. I'm currently assigned to our Dignitary Protective Division and was formerly the coordinator for the Democratic National Convention that occurred in Milwaukee in August, just a few months ago. And again, Cody, looking forward to this and cannot thank you enough for scheduling me to be on your podcast.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to have you on because I know there's a lot of stuff that goes into a lot of planning, especially security planning for the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention, respectively, too. But specifically, you worked on the Democratic National Convention. So I really wanted to have you on here to kind of speak about just the general convention planning for the Secret Service and how we're involved, state, federal, and local law enforcement agencies when we're conducting these security plans. But before we start, I just want to kind of get some background from you as far as, you know, where you're from, where you call home, and some interests you have.
Sure, Cody. Born in Farrell, Pennsylvania. And grew up most of my life in Cleveland, Ohio. Been an agent for about 22, almost 23 years. I started in 97 and have moved about six times throughout this agency and have been fortunate throughout my entire career to have worked in and worked in so many great offices and have worked for so many fantastic supervisors and have made so many just tremendous friends throughout my time with the service. But I call Cleveland, Ohio home and do enjoy a lot of physical activities, playing basketball, some golf, lots of running and some weight training. It's always been part of my life. My family is a very athletic family. Parents are teachers. My father is a basketball coach. My mother is an assistant principal. And, you know, the athletics had always been a pretty big part of our lives, and it has carried me through, to this day.
And so you mentioned some basketball and some golf. So I guess the first question I would ask is, do you have a favorite team for basketball?
Well, you know, Cody, calling Cleveland home, part and parcel, you're married to either the Browns or the Cavs or the Indians.
Okay.
So, Cleveland Browns for football and the Indians for baseball and, the Cleveland Cavaliers for basketball. And, we were riding pretty high when we had a power forward by the name of LeBron James with the Cavs. He was able to, bring a championship home to the city of Cleveland.
You're part of the Dignitary Protected Division. Prior to that, was there anything of note that you'd like to bring up for the listeners?
No, Cody, thanks for asking. Started in the Indianapolis field office. And for me, coming from Cleveland and moving out to the Midwest, it was a great opportunity to get to know some people and, to make some friends in that Indianapolis area. And there are still some former agents that I try to keep in touch with. Again, very lucky the current office manager of that Indianapolis field office is still running that office and have had an opportunity to stay in touch with Carrie in Indianapolis. From Indy, I was transferred to Houston, in the Houston field office, spent some time in Houston, and again, just made some wonderful friends and learned a lot along the way. Had some tremendous supervisors in Houston that you know challenged our team in Houston, and then from Houston, obviously, you know, opportunity of a lifetime to be able to serve on the Presidential Protective Division detail with President Bush, and had served about 6 years on PPD, and then I moved to DPD. And it's funny, Cody, when I got to DPD, the special agent in charge of that division was a gentleman by the name of David O'Connor. And I remember that first day when he welcomed me to DPD, you know, this is going to be a place you're going to want to call home. And, you know, that was in 2008. And I spent about 2.5-3 years there, and then moved on to an investigative assignment out to Cleveland, to the Cleveland field office. But I can tell you that some fond memories at that time. And I remember saying, I think I'm going to try to come back to this division. And it's the place that I call home, and very, you know, have a lot of great friends that are in DPD. And it truly is a great place to work, and great team members within DPD that create that. Not that every other division isn't within the Secret Service, because I think the Secret Service does family fantastic. And, but it's a special place in my heart. And I think it's a special place in Washington, D.C., DPD. From DPD, I went out to the Cleveland field office, from Cleveland to the Los Angeles field office as a supervisor, then from L.A. back to Cleveland as a supervisor. And, then I was, selected be the coordinator for the DNC in 2018.
And can you explain that process? Because basically a special agent has to put in their bid in, correct, to be selected for that responsibility?
That's right. It's a competitive process. I was going through the SDS program at the time. I had been a supervisor both in the Los Angeles field office, a large field office, and SDS field office. And I had been a supervisor in the Cleveland field office, a mid-sized field office. In LA for 2 years. I had been in Cleveland for about 2 years, a little bit more. And, you know, based upon my body of work and my supervisory experience out in LA and Cleveland, I bid on that assignment. And for me, it's a rewarding assignment. It was an opportunity to put together a team and not just work with personnel from within the Secret Service, but to work with our state and our local and our county emergency service professionals within the state of Wisconsin. And I had bid on that assignment in Milwaukee, another great Midwest town, you know, and it was a first for the city. It was a first for the state, that the city had never hosted a convention before. The state had never hosted a convention before. And I was looking forward to that challenge.
Well, and I want to say congratulations, because I mean, that's no easy feat. I mean, it's a bid process that only comes up once every 4 years, and I'm sure a lot of people put in for it to be able to have that responsibility. So just personally, I know it's a little late, but congratulations on being selected for it.
Cody, thank you. I don't know how many people put in for it. Very, very humbled to have been selected a few years ago for that assignment. We have a lot of just outstanding personnel within the Secret Service that certainly could have done the job, probably could have done a better job. But again, just humbled for that opportunity. And we selected a fantastic team. And, you know, again, the deputy coordinator, Dave Yaman, you know, we would not have been successful had it not been for his work as well. And I do want to recognize Dave, and, you know, and I'll probably recognize Dave throughout this podcast, but just a tremendous team. We had tremendous support from our headquarters division, tremendous support from both the Assistant Director of Investigations, Mike D'Ambrosia, and from our Assistant Director of Protective Operations, Kim Cheadle. Tremendous support from the director's office, you know, and again, the team. And Cody, I know we're going to talk about all the different challenges. You know, it's kind of that elephant in the room, such as COVID. And, you know, we were faced with with a lot of challenges throughout this process over the last, call it 14 months. And the team performed admirably. They were problem solvers. And, you know, at the end of the day, when the dust settled, you know, the convention, you know, it was what it was. But in true Secret Service fashion, you know, we made it work and we did our jobs. And, you know, it was a successful event. So thank you.
No, absolutely. And I think our discussion today will actually encompass the heart and soul that went into the planning for the security for the Democratic National Convention. And, you know, that's why I wanted you to have you on the show, because as we walk through this, I think people it'll click in people's minds what it takes to do this type of security planning. And it all starts with obviously getting selected to put the team together. But, you know, I was going to ask, like, when does this start as far as the security planning and notification for the, you know, the cities and their reps for the convention?
I guess let's just go back to the beginning, all right? I think it was 1998, and it was then President Clinton, and that's Presidential Decision Directive, PDD 62. And the only reason I remember it is because of the multiple PowerPoint presentations I had to give early on. But that essentially defined what a national special security event is. You know, and before that, I know the Secret Service had something called Major Events Division, and trying to figure out, okay, hey, loosely defined, what is it? What is a major event? What is a national special security event? So right around 98, President's Office and the federal government perspective, there was at least a definition. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is what a national special security event is. And here are some examples. The United Nations General Assembly, a presidential inauguration, State of the Union Address, convention. There's only two every 4 years, a Republican and a Democratic. In 98, we had definitions and we had framework. And then, you know, as we moved through the years, right, 03, if my memory serves, and 05, we began to really, really shrink down and really define how we go about and who has responsibilities. To where we've landed, you know, at least in like 2017 and 2018, in which we have specific partners and there are specific responsibilities between FEMA for emergency action, the Bureau for crisis hostage rescue, Render Safe for weapons of mass destruction, and then the Secret Service for the overall control and planning. So the conventions and the inaugural and the State of the Union and UNGA, right, the United Nations General Assembly, those receive automatic designation. Those are defined as national special security events. So typically, timeline-wise, Cody, about 12 months out, the planning process starts. And roughly, that's when Dave Yaman and I started. So we started about last year, last spring, April, May of 2019. And, you know, and again, As we start to see now in our campaign season, and we're about 25 days from the general election, we see candidates traveling and moving around the country and conducting whistle stop or airport type visits in those respective controlling field offices or resident offices throughout the state, East Coast to West Coast. They leverage a lot their relationships that they have built, not with just private sector stakeholders, but with federal, state, local, county, law enforcement, public safety departments. And they use those types of relationships to assist them with the planning and the overall curing of that particular site for that particular visit. Essentially, that's what we do, only we do it on a larger scale. And we do it for a longer time. We establish an executive steering committee. The Secret Service will work with FEMA, will work with the FBI, and then we'll work with top executives within the city, the county, and the state of where that designated national special security event will be. And then once the executive steering committee is established, and that committee is essentially the central nervous system, if you will, of the body of the planning. And those are the decision makers. And once that executive steering committee is established, then we will establish what are called subcommittees. The way I define those subcommittees, or the picture that I tried to paint whenever I would conduct a briefing, or our team would conduct a briefing, I should say, is essentially I tried to project the image of a puzzle when you're a little kid putting a puzzle together. Mm-hmm. And each piece of the puzzle has a very important function to the overall outcome of that puzzle. And that's what these subcommittees, each subcommittee has a very, very important piece in the overall and the overarching security plan. So from our airport to our drone mitigation, to our counter surveillance, to our transportation section, those are just some of the subcommittees, critical infrastructure, private sector, and then we break things down even further. So what would the executive steering committee would do would to then select subject matter experts for each one of these subcommittees. Now for Milwaukee, we had 27 different subcommittees, mm-hmm. and select subject matter experts, as I mentioned, and we would pair them with agents, with personnel from the United States Secret Service, with FEMA, from the FBI, state, county, local, law enforcement. And then those smaller teams, if you will, would begin planning on their specific responsibilities. If it was air traffic, it was airspace, if it was just the airport, then that smaller team, that breakdown into that smaller team, would make a security plan for just that smaller unit, if you will. And then the executive steering committee would bring it all together. So again, why do we begin 14 months out, 12 months out? For just that reason. There's a lot of thought and a lot of care that goes into selecting of a site for a national special security event. In some instances, cities compete for 6 months to a year just to be selected by that particular party, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans, to host a convention. So we take the time to get to know as many of the stakeholders and as many of the major role players within the city, within the county, and within the state, and really select the best of the best, if you will, to assist with the planning. And again, we start so far out because there are going to be so many changes. There are going to be, you know, so many peaks and valleys along the way that, you know, you need the time really, really to be able to work through all those subsets of problems.
I was going to ask, as far as like the planning aspect of it, do you, and this may be, a dumb question, but like, what is the commonalities and the differences between the cities? Is it generally the same plan for each city on how to approach it, or are they all unique and different that just require building from scratch each time?
The latter part of your question, yes. Okay. Each city is completely unique and different. And again, if you look maybe at the last few conventions, 4 years ago in 2016, Cleveland and Philadelphia, each of those cities presented some unique challenges. Although Philly had a convention prior to the Democratic convention in 2016, Cleveland had never hosted a convention before, or the last time Cleveland had hosted might have been in the early 1900s. So again, each city is unique. Each city presents different challenges. Honestly, if you were going to draw any similarities between 4 years ago and the conventions of just a few months ago, you know, you could draw some minor comparisons between Milwaukee and Cleveland in that they're cities both with a lake to their north, you know, with another major city nearby, Chicago for Milwaukee and Pittsburgh for Cleveland, you know, but really it stops about there. You're working with the city and you're working with city planners, but you're working with the county and you're working with the state. And in some instances, if you are working on a major event that has occurred in that city or that city has some experience with some major events, it can help. But can it also hurt too, because, you know, then you come away with the attitude of, hey, look, we've done this before, you know, we understand, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of thing. So each city is unique in and of themselves. And, you know, each plan is unique. Each city brings different positives and negatives to the security planning aspect. And, each plan, will come away with, you know, with some different wrinkles, you know, or that takes into account every potential threat to include COVID.
And so surrounding that, what were some of the special considerations, if you don't mind talking about it, some of the things you had to, while working on the security plan, you know, what kind of risk mitigations did you place in there? What kind of things did you set up to help, you know, prevent the spread of that virus?
These are challenging times. And, you know, I don't think anybody could have really ever predicted exactly where we were at now versus where we were at maybe in 2019, November, December of 2019. You know, and it goes back to that old adage of, you know, fail to plan, plan to fail. So we did have a fantastic plan. And we had a fantastic, you know, overall plan. And I can tell you, March of 2020, our balanced and inclusive plan essentially was for up to 80,000 people mm-hmm. visiting the city of Milwaukee and 21,000 credentialed members of the press, you know, all 30 some hundred delegates from the Democratic National Party. And we had a 500 bus transportation plan that was inclusive of two different states. Our transportation subcommittee worked diligently with the Illinois State Police, with the Chicago Police Department, with Lake and Gurney County Sheriff's Offices and the Rosemont Police Department, and then worked with the Wisconsin State Police, Milwaukee Police Department, Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office, and we were escorting 500 delegation buses. Mm. From parts of Rosemont, Illinois, which is essentially O'Hare Airport, north into Milwaukee, and then into our secure area, which in March was about 14 city blocks. By July, there were five buses. Our footprint was reduced to about two city blocks. But Cody, the point is, the plan was there. Mm-hmm. And then if you didn't, you know, again, if you didn't plan, then you might as well plan on failing. While we could not have planned for COVID, it was very important for our team, and it was very important for Dave Yaman and I, again, receiving tremendous support from our headquarters, just to ensure the vision of the Secret Service. We wanted to make sure that all of our subcommittee members, all of our Secret Service personnel, and any individual visiting our coordinating center in downtown Milwaukee felt as if they could work in that office. So that meant ensuring that the office was disinfected daily. It meant ensuring that everybody had the appropriate amount of PPE in their workstations. It meant having hand sanitizer stations throughout the hallways, all over our offices. We wanted to make sure that we were also providing as much information as we possibly could. So we worked with Safety and Health. And, you know, we work with our partners at Johns Hopkins. And then we also, you know, again, Cody, we talked about this a little bit, those pieces of the puzzle, right? Mm-hmm. And those subcommittee members. And, you know, we had a health and medical subcommittee. And again, we had subject matter experts on this committee. So we had virologists and we had, you know, doctors, medical support staff from local area hospitals within the state. And within the city of Milwaukee, we had some fantastic personnel from the Secret Service, Anthony Pugliese, being one of those individuals that headed up and sat as a co-chair on that medical and health subcommittee. So we were able to really take a lot of suggestions and recommendations from that subcommittee, of course, from the CDC and from our safety and health within the Secret Service, just to ensure that the environment was safe for our personnel to work in. We wanted to make sure, again, every individual had the appropriate amount of PPE. The office was disinfected at the end of each night daily, where it was reasonable, where it made sense. We had so many people that were working away from home, that were leaving kind of that safety of home, especially in May, especially in June. We wanted everybody to make sure that they were safe.
Is there anything that I haven't covered that you might want to speak about to the listeners?
You know, Cody, it's actually a great story, and it's something that, and thanks for asking. It would never, ever, you know, end up on anybody's radar this massive undertaking and 12, 13 months of planning and, you know, coordinating with different federal, state, and local agencies. Now, again, at one point in time, we had about 90 different state, federal, local agencies that we were coordinating with. And along the lines of coordination comes communication. And how do we communicate? And how and what type of redundancies do we have within those communications? Do we have cell phone? Do we have landline communication? Can we text one another? Can we send emails? Can we do video chats? And one of the responsibilities of the Secret Service is to set up, you know, what's called a multi-agency communication center. And typically, during that planning process, coordinators will work with the Executive Steering Committee and will attempt to find a site, 20, 30,000 square feet, that can be built out into this multi-agency communication center, which we're able to monitor traffic. We're able to use, you know, Department of Transportation. We're able to monitor our different radio frequencies that we use for both protection for post standing and for our different protectees, in which the county emergency services and the emergency operations and the city emergency operations, 911, for example, can be monitored. So that we have a general operational picture. We have an understanding of everything that's going on around us during our event. And Cody, this is just one of the great stories within the Milwaukee convention planning for the DNC. Our team had selected a site to be built out in June of 2019. And by March, the process, the paperwork process, the different process from across the government spectrum, think lattice, don't think a ladder, right? Mm-hmm. Or a spider web, if you will. That process had been taking just unusually long, an unusually long time. And again, a lot of it had to do with COVID. Mm-hmm. The team that was led by Brian Tuckett and by Aaron Moriarty really took matters into their own hands and within 3 weeks had found a different site, moved on from that first site that we had been working on for the last 10 months, found a different site and built it out in about 3 weeks. And now, Cody, you were there. Mm-hmm. You saw it. And, you know, that facility was tremendous, and you would never know that that facility was put together in 21 days. You would have thought that it had been kind of like something that had been started immediately 13 months ago. But from when Dave and I first saw it, when Brian Tuckett showed it to us, and again, for anybody that might be listening, it was an old Sports Authority. So if you remember what Sports Authorities were, it was essentially a sporting goods store. Mm-hmm. And Brian and Aaron basically pitched to Dave and I, hey, listen, this is our vision. We think we can do this and we think we can do that. And this store had been vacant for 17 months. And, you know, Dave and I looked at one another. And we had no other options left. We're like, okay, let's do it. And 21 days later, absolutely amazing. Brian and Aaron did an amazing job. They're tremendous leaders, and all agencies that just pitched in and helped. And that's one of the really great stories of this convention, because again, we can talk COVID, we can talk about the planning, and we can talk about protectees coming and going and what was going to happen with the delegates. But again, at the end of the day, the Secret Service still has a mission, and we still have a mission to perform, and we still have some basic fundamentals within that mission. At that particular time, we needed to set up a multi-agency communication center, you know, and our people didn't take no for an answer. And our people just didn't wait for someone else to make a decision. We showed some initiative. We were very, very proactive, and we were problem solvers. And, you know, the problem was, how are we going to complete this task when the paperwork hasn't even made its way through the entire federal system? Okay, we'll move on. We'll find somewhere else. We'll find another way. We'll create another way of doing this. And we did. And kudos to the team. Kudos to Aaron and Brian for putting it together. And again, thanks for that opportunity to share that with you, Cody, and with the listeners. It's one of the great stories, and it's one of the, you know, my fondest memories of the last 13 months is watching that transform in less than 21 days.
It was truly a case study. At the risk of sounding pretentious, I haven't seen something like that before as far as like locating an area and making it your own and the amount of logistics that went in that short amount of time. Because I remember seeing the building vacant and then coming in later and seeing what it looked like built out. I claim to be fortunate enough to be able to experience that and kind of witness that over time too.
Absolutely. For me as a coordinator, all I can say is it was very cool to be part of the team and just to watch it come together. And then during the convention, just to kind of go out and to thank everybody and to kind of see it functioning, see that coordinating center actually work. Because you can put something together and it can look great, but if it's not functional, then what good is it? And everything worked.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that story. I did have some other kind of personal questions or some fun questions to ask you about your experiences in Milwaukee. Are you able to, just as far as the culture goes, do you have like a favorite restaurant? You know, was there a place that you frequented a lot there in Milwaukee?
For those that are listening, maybe you know me, maybe you don't. I'm a big coffee guy, Cody, right? You know that every time you visited Milwaukee, I always had a cup of coffee in my hand. So for me, it was trying to get out to all the different local coffee shops in the area. And, you know, Collectivo Coffee is a really, really cool coffee shop. There's a coffee shop called Kickapoo. And there's a coffee shop by the name of Stone Creek. There's also a Dunkin' Donuts out there too. And you know, a lot of fond memories of, you know, making runs to get coffee early in the morning or late at night because we were up maybe typing away. Really had a very good time in Milwaukee. Yes, I tried the cheese curds. They're very good. And, you know, and prior to COVID had an opportunity to, you know, didn't get a chance to see the Green Bay Packers play, but, you know, was able to get in and see the Milwaukee Bucks play basketball and fun town. Kerry Dyer is the resident agent in charge of the Milwaukee resident office. You know, Kerry's office, it's a resident office. It's not a full field office. Mm-hmm. So when we landed in Milwaukee, you know, Kerry did just a tremendous job just introducing Dave and I and just ensuring that we were assimilating in, you know, the partnerships that Kerry and his team in Milwaukee created, you know, while they were there, certainly led to the success that we enjoyed in August for the convention.
All right, Mr. Pacey, I'm going to wrap things up here. I just wanted to thank you again for coming on the show and speaking about the DNC in Milwaukee and kind of sharing some inside stories about what you experienced in that very long planning process. I was going to ask if there was anything you wanted to tell or leave with the listeners.
Oh, Cody, again, I just want to thank you for this opportunity. For all the listeners out there, you know, continue to just be good to one another. You know, we're living in some tough times and, you know, respect each other and be good to one another and to the members of the Secret Service, it's a tremendous honor to be an agent and to work for this agency. For the younger agents, younger personnel of the Secret Service, I was very lucky along the way that there was always a senior agent that paid it forward that would work with me. And I would just hope that the younger members, the younger men and women of the Secret Service continue that time-honored tradition of paying it forward. When you have an opportunity with a younger member of the service to be a leader and to be an example and to continue to pay it forward, and we'll continue to be worthy of trust and confidence. Cody, thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, and it's been a pleasure. For more information or how to join, please go to www.secretservice.gov. And until next time, listeners, stay vigilant.